dark wings.
Dark Words, a Game of Thrones podcast. Season 5, Episode 8.
Hard Home.
The Night's King had been the 13th man to lead the Night's Watch, Old Man said. A warrior who knew no fear. And that was the fault in him, she would add, for all men must know fear. A woman was his downfall. A woman glimpsed from atop the wall, with skin as white as the moon and eyes like blue stars. Fearing nothing, he chased her and caught her and loved her, though her skin was cold as ice, and when he gave his seed to her, he gave his soul as well. He brought her back to the Nightfort and proclaimed her a queen and himself her king, and with strange sorceries he bound his sworn brothers to his will. For 13 years they had ruled, the Night's King and his corpse queen, till finally the Stark of Winterfell and Joramun of the Wildlings had joined to free the Watch from bondage. After his fall, when it was found he had been sacrificing to the others, all records of the Night's King had been destroyed, his very name forbidden. Some say he was a Bolton, Old Nan would always end. Some say a Magnar out of Skagos. Some say Umber, Flint, or Nori. Some would have you think he was a Woodfoot, from them who had ruled Bear Island before the Iron Men came. He never was. He was a Stark, the brother of the man who brought him down. A reading from A Storm of Swords, page 629.
You should have done it in Old Nan's voice. Although maybe she sounded just like you.
I think you have a career in books on tape.
Well, before I do that, I'll kick off this podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Chris Voorhees.
So how about that? Listening to the... Writer's commentary segment. Weiss and Benioff revealed maybe a little too much about, by naming the White Walker leader the Night King.
And now we've burdened you with it.
Or we're just wasting your time. It's completely unrelated because they haven't actually read the books.
Well, that's food for thought. So maybe there's some kind of, historical backstory. We were trying to think, but none of us recalled a reference to the Night King, but a quick visit to Reddit
revealed that there was many a reference, or at least one big story.
Right. One of Old Nan's stories in simpler times when there was still a Stark in Winterfell.
I wonder if there's got to be just an internet site. Well, maybe some of the ones that you go to are just like, look up all Old Nan stories and just, maybe I should just go back and reread all those.
The Song of Ice and Fire wiki is really complete. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Well, they do note here that Old Nan was right as often as she was wrong, as far as we know. But, also that... The Night's King is only discussed by Bran in A Storm of Swords, but Sam mentions him to Jon, but it's just a passing mention with no obvious implication. There doesn't appear to be any mentions of the Night's King from George R.R. Martin himself.
Hmm.
But the showrunners take it upon themselves to...
Name the character,
and imply some cool backstory. Like, maybe most importantly, it's possible to have sex with another.
Yeah.
Was this Night's King the same guy who collected Craster's baby, do we think?
I think so. I think it was the same.
Because of the crowny head?
Yeah.
Which reminds me, we were wondering about, what's the girl's name who likes Ramsay? Miranda.
Yeah.
We were wondering if we had seen her. Oh, have we seen her one other episode in the past? She was one of the two girls... getting Theon excited back when he was on the rack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
So we've seen her like 5 times or so. What were we talking about?
Getting Theon excited.
No. We were talking about the White Walker's reappearance and whether the that walker was the same walker. In other words, is there now an ongoing character?
I think he may have been Walker Texas Ranger.
You know, the walkers have a wardrobe upgrade, it seems.
Yeah.
From their early appearances.
They look badass.
They were a little shabby early on in the show. Now they've got some nice black armor to go with their blue heads.
Because
some
they're cool boots.
Of course, makes them white walkers with no white anywhere.
I liked the glimpse of the four horsemen of the apocalypse atop the cliff, and I was thinking, oh, that's ominous. Like, they just stand back and let their corpse army do their dirty work. But then shortly thereafter, they're right there in the thick of it.
Right.
Which
doing dirtier work.
Undermined it a little bit, but I mean, it was spectacular, that whole Hardhome battle sequence.
Necessary for plot development, Chuck.
And just chills and thrills. Literal chills.
Yeah.
Some spills as well.
A lot of whites spilling off the cliff.
A lot of kills.
I think the best action scene since the end of last season.
It was good.
At the wall.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this show is just kind of so, you know, scaled down and just like small conversations in little audience chambers and, you know, the occasional matte painting, you know, the occasional like brief glimpse of animated dragon or something. There's been disappointing battles, you know, probably 9 out of 10 times on this show, but
right.
Nope, once a season, they save up their pennies and they really make a splash.
Well, right? Geez, what about, I mean, well, I was going to say, I have a feeling the next episode might be pretty amazing too, but maybe that's going to be next season or maybe episode 10.
Well, I think we're anticipating some fighting pit awesomeness right as sort of a cliffhanger of the season.
I guess so, yeah. So we'll see Winterfell next, maybe not until next season, huh?
I think we'll see that next episode.
I mean,
probably.
Some real stuff. Some big time stuff.
That could be episode 10. I don't feel like I saw much Winterfell stuff from like the here's next week stuff. So,
well, we'll see Ramsay's like sort of war party, probably.
Him and his 20 guys.
Right.
Him and his 20 guys messing with Stannis's.
Where had we all already seen Danny's speech, as amazing as it was? It was in a
scene from last week or next week where she says, I'll break the
was
wheel.
Was it just a real short?
The writers probably quoted it word from word, word for word in their posts.
They probably did. I felt like we had seen a bunch of that speech, but maybe it was just the.
I think it was just the quick
next week's
preview.
Episode. Yeah, they should have left that out. I mean, they shouldn't have spoiled that,
right?
Because now it was the second time we'd seen it. It wasn't quite as impactful, and
right, but it was impactful. That whole scene.
It was.
I mean, the battle at Hardhome, spectacular. Not in the books. Maybe sort of vaguely referenced that things went poorly for the wildlings in that location. And what were you saying, Mike? That Melisandre had cautioned against bothering to go there to see if there were any survivors.
Yeah,
because she'd seen it in fires.
She'd seen it in her fires, and then because in the book, John, yeah, he sends a couple rangers north of the wall, and they come back. Well, they get killed basically.
They come back as whites.
No, the wildlings kill them. And no, they don't come back as whites, I don't think. But
we do know in the books that the whites attacked Hardhome, right?
I think, I don't know that it's directly referenced, but it's like something happened there.
Yeah, okay. They probably just believe it.
Do send some ships up there to go try and get them. And then they basically, I think, yeah, something happens up there where they get destroyed, whether it's the seas or whatever, or
they just speculate that the ship's never returned.
Right.
Pretty wild, Lings.
Yep.
So that's an excellent scene that has no corollary in the, or no whatever in the book, as well as the,
right.
Well, at least as far as we know, the conversation we were just referring to between Tyrion and Daenerys, obviously.
Pretty momentous.
Didn't happen in the book.
Another thing that
hasn't happened yet, at least.
You spend the whole book wondering what it'll be like when Tyrion and Daenerys finally meet, and we got there pretty fast on the show.
Before the big battle at the end, I was going to say, well, this was definitely the episode of really hastily 180-degree turns in alliances and trusts and beliefs and faiths, because, you know, first Daenerys is pretty frickin' okay with just bringing Tyrion on as an advisor, you know? I mean, we know where his strength is. It's his mouth. He talks a good game. He speaks in earnest. He's believable. He's charismatic. But, I mean...
But she doesn't necessarily... She buys into his premise that she needs a good advisor who knows the ways of Westeros.
But her personality, for him to come in and within probably 3 or 4 minutes say, well, here's what you should do with Jorah, and then she immediately takes his counsel, whether she took his counsel or not or agreed with him inherently, just having him say do this and have her doing it looks a certain way.
But he gave her the perfect counsel in that moment. He knew that she didn't want to have to kill him. And he, mm-hmm. so he gave her an out.
I agree with that, but with her defiance and petulance sometimes, I'm surprised she was okay with her court and people seeing her just be like, what should I do with this guy? You tell me, okay, we'll do that. Sounds good.
Well, true, but I mean, she was clearly conflicted, though trying to hide it. And as much as she wants to hate Jorah, she was moved, you know, I think when he basically told her what she already knew, that he loved her. So I think him saying that confirmed her own thoughts on it and gave her some insight into his savviness as well. So, I mean, it really played out very well. You know, I think they chose the right dialogue and the right kind of interplay for those two characters.
I agree, in case it's not clear. Yeah, I'm with you on that. But also, that combined with the whole...
It did feel rushed, but I mean, it's on the show, everything has to be rushed.
Right, right. And then the whole, you know... Wildling plus Night's Watch alignment, sort of, you know, how did he die? Well, I put an arrow through his heart. And then, you know, a little bit later, they're like, okay, we'll go with you anyway. Well, half of them.
I mean, but Tormund backed that up immediately with the proper, you know, explanation that it was an arrow of mercy.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Which was super cool because it saved Jon's skin in that moment, but it also reaffirmed Tormund's appreciation of Jon's bravery and humanity and having chosen to do that. It was pretty cool to see Tormund and Jon standing together, backing each other up like that.
More like the book in places, maybe? In a sense where...
I don't know.
Tormund was pretty, a lot more like...
You only get glimpses of the book Tormund in the show Tormund.
Yeah.
Just with some of his off-color comments about how John's prettier than his two daughters.
Right.
When he was boasting about fucking a bear at the end of the last season.
Yeah.
Those are true Tormund moments. So, all right. Well, we can just hit the high points and then dwell on them. So, Hardhome, amazing. Tyrion and Daenerys, pretty amazing. And Sansa learning from Reek that her brothers are still alive,
right,
is just kind of, in, you know, you just have to imagine how that changes her, you know,
her motivations,
her hope, her motivations. Right. It's going to inform everything she does going forward.
Because she basically thinks, yeah, everybody in her family is dead. Because she thinks Arya is dead too. So, and then she knows for sure that, you know, Rob and her mom are dead and her dad. Yeah.
Well, now she has kind of, she can have an agenda to fight for her family, and as opposed to just live in Littlefinger's world now.
Her character needed motivation in the story. This was a subplot that I felt like was going nowhere with Sansa. She had no real motivation to do anything to start. You know, again, like we discussed last week.
Do you think
where
Sansa...
she started to grow a backbone, and then mm-hmm. she's all of a sudden just a mess again, and now maybe they'll use this to... She needed something. That storyline needed something.
Because they threw away her storyline from the books, which has right. a whole other area to explore, where right. she will become kind of a shrewd manipulator.
Every one of the scenes we've talked about, I've got quibbles. I want to, but this one, my quibble, I'm okay with, because the show needed it. I felt like that whole subplot was just kind of yawn.
They saved Sansa to have a real purpose now.
Right.
Well, is she going to task Brienne with finding Bran and Rickon now?
I don't know.
Through birthright? I like you know, it. Just kind of... Like
Brienne's Valyrian steel is going to be needed at the wall, though.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Are you? Can I borrow that? I'm going up north, if I could just for a minute.
Send all Valyrian steel to the wall, please.
Who else has Valyrian steel on the show?
Don't all the great houses have their own Valyrian steel heirlooms?
Two Valyrian steel swords were forged
out of ice.
Out of ice.
Jamie and
Jamie has one.
Heartbreaker or Heartrender.
Oathkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
Which was Joffrey's and sword, who got the other one? Jamie?
I think
he gave to Brienne.
He gave to Brienne, right.
But I'm sure he has a Valyrian steel sword.
Joffrey had the other one. Who took Joffrey's?
I don't know.
Joffrey's has disappeared. Maybe we'll see the mountain monster come forth with that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. The work continues.
Robert Strong.
That's getting ahead of ourselves. The work continues, yeah. I guess that was the only other really thing that happened on this show was glimpsing Cersei suffering in her cell.
What do we think of her suffering?
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I don't understand why she wasn't just drinking those drips of water that were coming from the ceiling, though, like the whole time in the background.
Right.
Like,
she's lapping it up off the floor.
Here's this ladle of water, and I look in the background and I just see water dripping. Like,
why
are you not just underneath that the whole time? Like,
that's Marjorie's urine dripping from the cell above. Yeah.
I drink it.
This is what I was.
Nothing. Qyburn should have brought her some water purification tablets.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going to happen with Cersei, if she's going to end up confessing or if it's just going
to... It'll be trial by combat. It has to be. Nothing else will satisfy.
Cersei only speculated that Qyburn was going to say when he said, there's a way, and she said, I'll never confess. But do you think that's what he was talking about?
No.
Yeah.
They were interrupted by the mean
Septon.
Septa.
Just whacking her up with the water ladle. Boom. No water for
Whack
you.
Whack her harder.
Pretty Nurse Ratchety.
I guess, no, there was also, but then there's also some Arya.
Of course.
Oh, right.
Can't forget that.
That's moving along nicely.
Another name change.
What was her name? Like, Lena?
Lana. But wasn't she Cat of the Canals?
Yep.
She was several. Yeah. I don't think Lana one.
She sold oysters for...
Yeah.
I mean, that's true.
That seemed like one of her characters.
I think they changed the character name, though.
Yeah.
Maybe, was it Cat of the Canals that chucked the oysters?
Yes.
Okay.
Or she sold... Or did she sell rats?
Oysters.
Oysters? Yeah. Okay.
Because she worked for Busco and his little family.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think, where she's going to now. When he sent her... Because she's not supposed to go left anymore. She's supposed to go right.
No, that's when she went. He told her to go, and that's when she saw the little insurance guy.
Right.
Because they talk first, and then it shows her going out into the street.
And her next mission is to go back and poison an oyster for that guy.
She said you'll find out everything you can about him first, right?
Right.
She'll learn everything so she knows as much about him as she does herself.
Because in the book, it basically hammers home, she's supposed to go out and, learn three new things every day and come back and talk to the, what do they call him in the book? The something-faced man? The
two-faced man?
No.
the three-faced man.
The many-faced man? The several-faced
The kind old man or something like that, I think.
When she was speaking with him in front of the pool and there was the man praying behind them, was that the same man who had been rebuffed by the insurance man?
I think so.
Okay.
That's what I gathered. Because that's kind of what they have to do, right? They basically have to sacrifice themselves to the stranger to have them kill somebody for him. Is that how it works? I don't think he can just come in and be like, kill this person for me.
This guy stinks.
Yeah, something like that. I don't think you always have to sacrifice yourself to get the faceless men to kill someone for you. But that's a way if you can't pay some other fee, maybe.
We must speculate because none of it's made clear.
Right. And what's up with the waif, you know, the waif. They haven't referred to her as that right. on the show, I don't think, but other just sort of the jealous other acolyte of the Faceless right. Man Temple.
Who's been there a lot longer than Arya has.
It's see, like in the book, she's depicted as just someone in the Faceless Man program who's moving along properly, or also like a mentor to Arya, who's sort of aloof and enigmatic, you know, giving her lessons as often as the other guy. But in this, it kind of seems like, yeah, she's somehow petulant and jealous and being mean to Arya out of jealousy as opposed to part of, you know, standard hazing.
Management trainee.
So the Valyrian steel was pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
It had to happen. All that Night King stuff just
really?
So it's like, you know, John and the Night King, kind of the stare down at the end where he raises the dead.
Right.
Although, didn't we catch a glimpse of the Then that didn't want to go with John already being raised?
Yeah, he was already up stabbing people.
He was already up stabbing people. So it's not like everyone that died in the battle had to wait for his jester to rise.
Right.
That was just sort of a little dramatic end piece. Like, they were going to rise.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Or maybe they were just doing that in the background the whole time, like, you know, a couple times off screen. Just kept raising their hands.
That was his one action per battle round.
Right.
they're definitely setting up. They're giving Jon Snow a sort of an arch enemy here. I mean, my concerns about Jon Snow's character, at least show wise, are gone. They've set up quite a.
So you don't think what happens at the end of the book is going to happen?
Nope.
What do you think about the conversation with Ollie and?
Right.
Sam.
So somebody mentioned they don't think Ollie's got good intentions, but that would be.
I think Sam misses the point a bit too.
Sam just trusts John.
Right.
But I mean Sam
understands, explains it
pretty well.
Well, like,
understand, but I mean he didn't explain it with the proper empathy for Ollie's position.
Right.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm sorry that your village was slaughtered, but you know, we're all going to get killed basically if we don't join with the wildlings. Like, he's just kind of like, yeah, you know, I trust John or whatever.
And he's kind of condescending with his little, you know, well, men will brawl from time to time.
Right.
You know, men have to make hard choices. Men would like a little salt and pepper with their mutton.
Your family gets killed here and there. It's just, you know, it's part of growing up.
You'll figure it out. You're a good kid.
Yeah, I should have gave him a little
hair tussle.
But his
take some of this bread with you.
His comment about, you know, men sometimes have to make a choice that doesn't seem like the right choice to other people, but they have to do it because they know it's right.
You think that might come back to haunt him?
I think it. I think they planted the seed for Ollie to stab John in the back somehow. We caught a glimpse in the scenes from next week of John and Tormund and the giant and everybody standing at the base of the wall and Sir Alistair looking down imperiously. Maybe we'll see Ollie like whisper in Sir Alistair's ear. And,
right.
Ollie's the Grima worm tongue of the wall now.
I think what happens in the book is going to happen. John.
Well, let's not talk about that.
As a season cliffhanger? Perhaps. What did you think of...
I think... Well, maybe so. I guess as I'm thinking about Ollie, I'm wondering more if the look you noticed was him already knowing something as opposed to preparing to take action himself.
You think Ollie will be instrumental in actually opening the gates for them where Sir Alistair wasn't going to? It could be, whole other.
Well, I'm wondering if, I'm wondering if Ollie heard some scuttlebutt around camp.
Maybe Ollie's just gunning for Tormund.
You shouldn't say too much.
Craig
will edit it all out.
Jon Snow hasn't done anything to him to create a lot of personal enmity between Ollie and Jon. He doesn't understand Jon's position, but it's a long ways between that and
wanting to kill the Lord Commander, right?
So I was thinking, you know, maybe he knows something's up.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of talk for the large contingent of brothers who aren't with John.
Right.
John's motivating speech to the wildlings of, do it for the children. It seems to work on everyone. Always do it for the kids. You know, Whitney Houston, Jon Snow.
That was pretty wicked that the attractive lady wildling that we grew so close to in such a short amount of time was taken down by a rabid pack of zombie kids.
Yeah.
And she just gave up.
She couldn't do it.
She was just like, I'm not going to
fight the zombie kids. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, Chuck and I both groaned when she said, I'll be right back for you.
Right.
But, oh, don't say that. Never say that.
You know, she's dead. Yeah. Well, she's actually alive now. Dead alive.
Undead.
Undead.
Undead again.
How'd you like the giant stuff?
Giant,
pretty good.
Great. Mm-hmm. And not even in, I mean, it was interesting that even with the wolves, they're not like, oh, there's the wolves sitting off in the background. It's always like a grand entrance. But that whole scene, the giant's just hanging out back there.
Yeah.
And that's pretty.
He's right in the thick of it, mixing it up.
Right.
Just throwing whites off, crushing them, stepping on them, hitting them with a huge piece of timber.
Did anyone fear for Dolores Ed's life for a split second?
When he,
I was like, oh, he's don't stand there.
He's
and
about
a
the
giant.
Last remaining character of, or at least of John's,
inner circle.
Yeah, his inner circle, other than Sam, because Gren and
Pip,
and
all dead.
Yeah.
Well, did we miss anything? There was basically one huge battle.
Sir Jorah returned to the
gladiator
slave owner.
Right, I was going to mention that earlier. They, you know, by Tyrion telling her, oh, just send him away, it kind of sets up Jorah to
come back
in a momentous way
has a single-minded purpose now, and he's proven it. I mean, he is putting it all on the line again.
What's his goal here exactly? Is to be the champion of these next games in the pits or whatever?
Let me fight for her and you can own me.
Right.
He wants to go to the great games and fight in front of her again, just so he can
see her again, basically. Yeah. He entered back into slavery for a chance to see Daenerys again.
Right.
Even knowing probably that she'll just rebuff him again.
Right. And he's got grayscale anyway.
All that impressed with his,
that's a good point.
Got little to lose.
And they did make it so that he looked at that before he came back and said that. So yeah, that's a good point.
It hasn't progressed that much further, but so we'll see. Something momentous is coming for Jorah, I'm sure.
Dragon Rider.
Maybe.
Who are your three Dragon Riders? Chuck.
John, Tyrion, and Dany. Although, with Bran as an alternate.
Okay, so here's my quibble with Daenerys. She's not that heroic in the books. And Tyrion's motivation to
follow someone great?
That's more Varys' motivation than Tyrion. Do you remember their early, you know, Tyrion was the one who was like, politics is just cold calculation and power struggles and backstabbing, and Varys served the realm. They used to have those conversations, and now Tyrion's, I mean, I'm not totally buying how they just sort of subtly changed the direction of his character. And Daenerys from the book, maybe not completely, but she pretty much just wants to conquer Westeros. I think she's too worried about making the world a better place.
But, well, I mean, she also wants to do right by the slaves that she freed.
That's true, yeah.
It's a good talk.
And she makes a comment at some point, I think we talked about this before, where Ser Barristan and Jorah were both like, let's just leave this mess behind and take our strength across the sea.
Right.
And she's like, no, if I'm going to be a ruler, I want to prove that I can do it right here, right now.
And she does, I guess you're right, she does have that motivation in the books, too.
But Tyrion's motivation, I mean, in this episode, I think, first of all, he's happy to have access to wine.
Right.
He's happy to not
have his head cut off.
He's happy to be in a position to use his reasoning and, you know, his intellect to better his position. And he's doing all that to help Daenerys, or he has to help Daenerys in order to have those other things. But he, I don't think it'll be long before he, you know, is ensconced enough in Daenerys's inner circle to where he can start thinking ahead to how am I going to get over on Littlefinger? How am I going to get over on Cersei?
Right.
How am I going to make some shit happen back in Westeros in a spectacular fashion? Although in this one, he did give her the counsel of fuck Westeros. Let's just do cool shit over here.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was maybe the part I didn't.
Well, he went on to say that he was fairly unsure that she could pull it off. I mean, didn't it seem born of concern that they were going to get over there and then maybe be killed?
Like, who are your allies? Right. Maybe the Tyrells.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not enough.
No mention of Dorne.
Yeah, there wasn't any mention of. I was surprised
in her wheel speech.
Yeah,
but I guess the Dornish have never been on top.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been apart.
They've been removed. Yeah.
No Dorne action this week at all.
Yeah, from the preview for next week, I don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, because it's
nothing. Maybe.
Yeah.
Prince Doran and Jaime
talking about.
Sit down.
Oh, you have to be either say you're allegiant to me or I'm going to kill you. Basically, was.
It's not a bad stopping place for a minute, you know, maybe. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, yeah. I mean, the battle was amazing, and it was like, you know, a full half of the episode.
Which is why we're at exactly half the time we normally talk. But that's okay.
Let's describe the battle in half hour long detail.
Each death and each...
I'll recite some more of old man stories, shall I? Maybe that's enough hashing it out this time around.
Maybe.
All right, well, check in again next week and see where we're at.